This is the first time we are in this observatory. I think we are going to adopt the idea. So it's a very nice place. Although still we have to make the walk between the two buildings. But not every day we have a rainy day like this, so it will be okay. A well sacrifice for the purpose. Today's lectures, titled The Concept of Light in Iranian Religion, will be delivered by Dr. Mujan Mumin, which we are very happy that he accepted the invitation and made the effort to come. Dr. Mumin was born in Iran, but was educated and raised in England, attending the University of Cambridge. He has a special interest in the study of the Baha'i faith and Shi'i Islam, both from viewpoint of their history and their doctrines. In recent years, his interests have extended to the study of the phenomena of religion. His principal publications in the field include Introduction to Shi'i Islam, which every Islamist or Middle Eastern specialist knows very well, The Babi and Baha'i Faith, 1844-1944, Some Contemporary Western Accounts, which was published in 1982, and The Phenomenon of Religion, which was published in 1999. He has contributed articles to Encyclopedia Iranica and Encyclopedia of the Modern Islamic World, as well as papers to academic journals such as International Journal of Middle Eastern Studies, Past and Present, Iran and Religion. He is a fellow of the Royal Asiatic Society and a member of the British Society for Middle Eastern Studies, the Society for Iranian Studies, the British Association for the Study of Religion, and the Association of for Baha'i Studies. Please, Dr. Mumin.
Thank you. The title of this presentation is The Concept of Light in Iranian Religion. And the thesis of the presentation is that throughout the history of the Iranian people, insofar as we can reconstruct that history, light has played an important role in Iranian religion as being the closest thing in this material universe to the divine. Now, I'd like to start my presentation by making a few preliminary comments. The first is that given that we have some 5 millennia of the development of Iranian religion, we can do no more in this presentation than just give a few highlights, and this will hardly be comprehensive. The second point is that in making this presenting this thesis, I'm not implying that light has not also played a major role in other religions. Of course, one only has to look at the way that light, for example, is used in Christian churches, particularly in the medieval period, to see that light also played an important role in other religions. But what I hope you'll see from my presentation is why I'm submitting to you that in Iranian religion it has played a special role, perhaps unparalleled in any other system of religious thought. The third point that I want to make is that I'm going to be using the word light, but what I intend by it is a concept that has appeared recurrently in Iranian thought, and different words have been attached to it over the millennia. And what it means is not just light generically, and specifically not, say, for example, the light that a star gives, or the light that the moon gives, or a light that you might get from a candle, but rather a glowing, intense light, such as that given by the sun. And the word, the concept that I'm considering may perhaps be better captured by such English words as splendor, glory, effulgence, and these sorts of words. But in the rest of this presentation, I'm going to use the word light. But bear in mind that that's this light that I'm talking about is this solar light and not just any light. If we start with what little knowledge we have of the earliest manifestations of Iranian religion, we know that pre-Zoroastrian religions of Iran, we know very little about them, but what there is evidence that at the early stages of the Iranian peoples, even before, for example, the Aryan tribes split into an Indian and an Iranian branch and moved into their respective geographical areas, they worshipped, probably as their main deity, a god of light or a sun god called Mitra or Mithra. In Indian religion, this became Mitra, the sun god of the Vedas, the lord of the day, who watches over and protects people. And in Iranian religion, it similarly developed into Mithra, the sun god. Also in pre-Zoroastrian religion of Iran, you have the Yima, the first man, the prototype god-king figure, who is invested with a luminous glory, the Khwarena. He's described as sun-like in his glory, and it is this Khwarena that brings him his good fortune, and when he lies, it deserts him. Then, coming on to Zoroastrian religion itself, we find that the creation myth in Zoroastrianism speaks of Ahriman sitting in darkness, knowing nothing of Ahuramazda. And then he sees the first indications of Ahuramazda in the distance. And what is it that he sees? He sees light. And this is the first indication of the divine that he sees. It's light. So what primarily he lacks and what Ahuramazda has is light. And that light gradually increases, and he sees that it's Ahuramazda, the divine being, the origin of all good, who is a being of light. And in Zoroastrianism, this luminosity, this glorious light, is in the first place associated, as I say, with Ahuramazda, the creator god, but it's also the vehicle through which he acts in the world, leading all created things to good fortune and to well-being. It's the divine essence, for example, in Zoroaster, and it is the splendor and good fortune of the king, so that it's not so much that the kings held their kingship through it, but rather that it itself was the kingship of the king. If it deserted the king, then he was no longer the king. And so it was itself that through which the king ruled, and it was also the prophethood of Zoroaster, was this luminous glory that surrounded him. In Pahlavi, the word became Khwar and Khware, but the concept remained the same. It was considered that while the Sasanian kings had this divine light, fortune remained with them. And the word came down into modern Persian in various forms, as Khore or Kharo, meaning divine light or illumination, as Far, meaning light or glory or splendor, and as Farah, meaning grandeur or magnificence. The god Mithra continued from the pre-Iranian religion into Zoroastrianism, appearing in some of the Yashts, which are the earliest Zoroastrian scriptures. Mithra became Mehr, who was again the god of sun and of light, and his festival Mehragan in the autumn was second only to Nowruz in its importance. And of course Mithra also, the worship of Mithra as the god of the sun and of light, separated from that Mithraism and spread from the Middle East into the Roman Empire and became practically the state religion of the Roman Empire in the second and third centuries. And just as an aside, as a note of interest, the artistic device of the halo in Christian painting probably derives from this same idea of the Khwarena, the divine light that encompasses the king and surrounds him and descends upon him. It was carried over through Mithraism into Roman art, and you can find portraits of Roman emperors. I saw one in Cyprus, for example, with a halo surrounding them, and then Roman artists began to use the halo as a graphic depiction of the divine light and took it over into Christian art, where it became the halo that surrounds Christ and saints and so on. So moving swiftly on to then to Islam, in this very brief review that we're doing. In Islam, Islam itself provided a justification for the continuation into Islam of these Iranian, of these ideas from Iranian revolution, of Iranian religion, with because through the presence in the Quran of the light verse. In the Quran we have this verse which in many ways echoes the Zoroastrian concept of the divine light, and it was used by Iranian authors in the Islamic setting as a way of bringing forward these ideas of divine light from the Zoroastrian past into the Islamic present of Iran. This verse, for the benefit of those of you who don't know it, says, it's in Quran, Surah 24, verse 35, it says, God is the light of the heavens and the earth. The similitude or the parable of his light is as if there were a niche, and within it a lamp, the lamp enclosed in glass, the glass as it were a brilliant star, lit from a blessed tree, an olive, neither of the east nor of the west, whose oil is well nigh luminous, though fire scarcely touched it. It is light upon light. God doth guide whom he will to his light. And God doth set forth parables for men, and God doth know all things. So this theme, this light verse, provided the justification for Muslim Iranian authors to bring forward these ideas from Iranian religion into Islam. And we find, particularly in the early period in Iranian Sufism, many references to this glorious light. The following, for example, is from Rusbahan Baghli, who died in 1209. And in this following passage, he's attempting to describe his vision of the divine. He says, were it not for ignoramuses who accuse us of making likenesses of the created, I would have indicated something of what I have seen of God, the light of his glory, the brilliance of his holiness, his great majesty. When the glory of his attributes manifests in something, all creation and temporality submits before it. And then another similar passage from another Iranian Sufi writer, Najmuddin Kubra, who was more or less a contemporary of Rusbahan Baghli. He died in 1221. He wrote, and there are frequent references in this back to the light verse of the Quran. He says, there are lights which ascend and lights which descend. The ascending lights are the lights of the heart. The descending lights are those of the throne. The light of the creature is the veil between the throne and the heart. When this veil is rent and a door to the throne opens in the heart, like springs towards like, light rises towards light, and light comes down upon light, and it is light upon light, referring back to that Quranic verse. And then he goes on to say, and at that moment, before you, before your face, there is another face, also of light, irradiating light, while behind its diaphanous veil a sun becomes visible, seemingly animated by a movement to and fro. Next, the whole of your person is immersed in purity, and suddenly you are gazing at a person of light, who is also irradiating light. So these are the sorts of things that you can find in the writings of the Iranian Sufi writers, but perhaps the theme of this radiant, glorious light can be found most clearly and most vividly in the writings of Shahabuddin Sohrawardi, who was killed in 1191. Indeed, the very word Eshraq, which is so closely associated with Sohrawardi, he's called the Sheikh al-Eshraq, and his school is called the Eshraqiyun. This word itself is exactly this concept that we're talking about, this concept that we're of an effulgent, radiant, glorious light. This word Eshraq, that is so closely associated with him, means exactly the same thing. Corban, for example, aptly translates this word Eshraq as la lumière de gloire, the light of glory, and he directly equates it with the Zoroastrian Horre. Indeed, Sohrawardi himself is quite open about the fact that he found the inspiration for his ideas about the divine light and angels and other ideas from Zoroastrianism, so it's not something that he is concealing. What Sohrawardi did was to replace the typical Neoplatonic Avicennan ontology, which sees all existent things as having different grades of being. So God is absolute being, and then all other things are emanating down from God in various grades of being. What Sohrawardi did was to replace that with a metaphysics of light. So in his metaphysics, God is the light of lights, the Nur al-Anwar, and everything else possesses a lesser intensity of light. And so the status of any entity depends on how close they are to the light of lights and how much they are consequently illuminated by it. So whatever's closest to God is pure, has greater degree of light, while increasing darkness denotes materiality and distance from the divine. And what's important to note is that this metaphysics of light was not just something that Sohrawardi did for the sake of it, but he didn't arrive at these conclusions by rational thought or any systematic thought. What he was trying to do was, it was based on his own experience, on his own mystical visions that he had, and what he was trying to do was to describe his mystical visions and the reality that he perceived in the course of these visions, and this is the way that he rationalized and conceptualized his mystical experience. Another typical passage from Sohrawardi, where he casts this radiating light as being in the physical world, the closest phenomenon to the divine, is the following. He says, "Thou, my lord and prince, my most holy angel, my precious spiritual being, thou who art clothed in the most brilliant of divine lights, may thou manifest thyself to me in the most beautiful of epiphanies. Show me the light of thy dazzling face. Be for me the mediator. Lift the veils of darkness from my heart." So, I think you can see here how important this concept of this divine, radiating, glorious light was in Iranian mysticism and Sufism. But of course, the other aspect of Islam in Iran has been Shiism. And if we go to Shiism, we find an equally rich source of materials for this theme that we're pursuing. From the very first, what we might call Shi'i imamology, the study of the imams in Shiism, was tied up with this theme of light. In the Shi'i traditions, we find that in primordial times, before God created the creation, there was a light that separated from God. It was the first thing that separated from God. And this light was the Mohammedan reality, the Mohammedan light. And then it divided into two, which represents Muhammad and Ali. And then it split into another, a further 11 imams and Fatima, making a total of 14 lights. And then eventually the whole of creation emanated from these lights, through the instrumentality of these lights. Indeed, if we study collections of Shi'i traditions, such as the Bihar al-Anwar of Muhammad Baqir Majlisi. The very name Bihar al-Anwar, of course, is Oceans of Lights, which is itself significant. But in his collection of traditions, we find a large number of traditions regarding this divine light as the primal origin of the Imams. And some of them describe the light as surrounding the throne of God. And we can see there the idea of coming through from Zoroastrianism, if you like, of the divine light that surrounded the throne of the king. You can see almost exactly parallel traditions in the Bihar al-Anwar of the divine light that surrounds the throne of God. So this concern with divine light and with divine illumination can be found throughout Iranian Shiism and links very clearly back through Sohrawardi perhaps to Zoroastrianism, and it's frequently quoted by later philosophers and mystics. For example, perhaps the greatest of the Shi'i philosopher mystics, Mullah Sadra, who died in 1640, in one of his most important works, The Wisdom of the Throne, Al-Hikmat al-Arshiya, uses the theme of divine illumination, or Eshraq, as a constant refrain throughout the work. He regards the quest for wisdom as the process of becoming increasingly identified with this divine light, and drawing on the light which is available from the niche of prophethood, which is spoken of in the light verse of the Quran. And he calls each of the stages or viewpoints in his book, he calls each one of these a mashreq, a place of ishraq, a place of illumination, a dawning place of light. So then moving on again, what we were talking about there with Mullah Sadra was the Safavid period, moving on from the Safavid period, that was the 17th century, moving on to the 19th century and the early Qajar period, we have the Shaykhi movement in Shi'ism. Now, although the founder of the Shaykhi movement was an Arab, Shaykh Ahmad al-Ahsai, this movement found great resonance in Iran, and Shaykh Ahmad in fact spent most of his active life as a scholar in Iran. And the second leader of the movement, Sayyid Kazem Rashti, was an Iranian. And so I think we're justified in including a look at Shaykhism as part of this survey of Iranian religion. If we look at the works of Shaykh Ahmad, and in particular his magnum opus, the commentary on the great universal prayer of visitation, this is a prayer that's said when visiting the shrines of the imams. He wrote a commentary on this prayer, and in commenting on one passage of the prayer where the imams are called the light of God, he writes the following passage, which I think is particularly significant because it's both looking back at the traditional Shi'i interpretation of the Quran and also in a sense looking forward to Baha'i interpretations as well. In commenting on on this verse that says that the imams are the light of God, Sheikh Ahmad refers to comments on the Bismillah, the opening words of the Quran, in the name of God, and he quotes a tradition from Imam Sadiq the sixth, the Shi'i imam, which occurs in many of the leading collections of Shi'i hadith. He writes, this is Sheikh Ahmad writing, he, Imam Sadiq, said, the Ba of Bismillah, that's the first letter of Bismillah, is Ba. The Ba of Bismillah is the glory of God, Baha'u'llah. The seen is the radiance of God, Sana'u'llah, and so forth. And the word Baha means brilliance, Diya, and Sana' means light, Nur. Even as he has said, exalted be he, and this is from the Quran, he it is who has made the sun as brilliance and the moon as light. And it is well established among them that light is itself apparent that causes other things to become apparent. And brilliance and radiance partake of this meaning, in that radiance, like brilliance, is itself apparent and causes other things to become apparent. Those who are learned in the divine mysteries use the Ba to indicate the realm of Jabarut, which is one of the highest of the divine realms, and seen to indicate the realm of Malakut. Thus the Jabarut is brilliance, and the Malakut is radiance. The realm of Jabarut is itself apparent, and is the cause of the appearance of everything else that is below it, in the realms of Malakut and Mulk. And similarly with radiance, it is itself apparent and is the cause of the appearance of what is below it, mulk. So what he's saying is that it is through light that things become apparent, become real, it is through the shedding of this light from the higher divine realms to succeeding lower divine realms. It is through the shedding of this light that things come into being, become apparent, become real. They manifest themselves through the shedding of this light from the higher realms to the lower realms, and each realm successively sheds its light upon the realm below and causes that realm to become into being. And there is no doubt that they, these three realms, are from there, the Imam's lights, and they, the Imams, are the light of lights. Every single particle in existence is one of the lights of God, praised be He. And if there be in any of these realms anything of darkness, it would not appear of itself, it would only be caused to appear by something else, in other words, that's shedding light upon it. So anything that manifests itself in creation is through the shedding of this light upon it. And there's another very interesting passage in the same book where Sheikh Ahmad is commenting on the words which appear in this prayer of visitation, the words, "And the earth is illumined, Ashrafat, by your light." And here he creates the eschatological tension that's typical of his work. He links the concept of light to the emergence of the hidden Imam. So this is now, Sheikh Ahmad says, his words, and this is from the prayer of visitation, "And the earth is illumined by your light," are taken from the Quranic words, "And the earth is illumined by the light of its Lord." And it is related from the Imam Sadat, the sixth Shi'i Imam, concerning this verse, "The Lord of the earth is the Imam of the earth," in other words, the hidden Imam. "And it was said, were he to emerge, were the hidden Imam to emerge, how would it..." So he was asked, "Were he to emerge, were the hidden Imam to emerge, how would it be?" And the Imam replied, "The people would no longer need the brightness of the sun and the light of the moon. The light of the Imam would be sufficient for them." Then, going on from the Sheikhi movement at the beginning of the 19th century to the Babi movement in the mid-19th century, here we have a wealth of possible choices open to us in citing passages relating from the Bab, relating to this theme of light. For example, in the concluding chapter of his first book that he wrote after he put forward a claim, the Ghayyum al-Asma, the Bab identifies himself with the light of the light verse in the Quran, and also with the light coming from the burning bush of the Sinaitic experience of Moses. The Bab says, first of all, referring to the light verse of the Quran, "I am the lamp which the finger of God has lit within its niche and caused to shine with deathless splendor." And then referring to the Sinaitic experience of Moses, he says, I am the flame of that supernal light that glowed upon Sinai in that gladsome spot and lay concealed in the midst of the burning bush." And throughout his writings, the Bab frequently plays upon the contrast between the two words Nar and Nur. Nur is the divine light that's being shed forth through him and illuminating the whole world. Nar is the flickering flame of hellfire with which all who are opposed to the Bab stand identified. And you find that difference between Nar and Nur frequently in the writings of the Bab. And we can quote so many other passages from the writings of the Bab, as I said. But we'll move on and come to Baha'u'llah in the last half of the 19th century. And here, although we're thousands of years after the starting point of our investigation, we find the same centrality of the same concept of light. Indeed, Baha'u'llah may be said to have crowned this concept by taking for himself the name Baha. Baha is exactly this same concept that we've been speaking of light, glory, splendor. These are the ways that this word can be translated. We saw how Sheikh Ahmad identified this word Baha with the light of the sun in his commentary on the Basmallah. Baha'u'llah now took this word Baha and identified himself with this word. For example, when he was brought before a court in the city of Akka, he hadn't asked to identify himself. He said, "My name is Baha, my country is Nur." Now, here, of course, he was making a theological statement as well as a factual statement about his identity. He was saying that his name was Baha'u'llah, and in fact, his homeland, the place that he came from was the district of Nur in Mazandaran. So he was making a factual statement about his name and origins, but he was also making a theological statement that his name was glory and his homeland was Nur, light. Needless to say, the word Baha, thus the concept of this glorious light, appear in numerous places in the writings of Baha'u'llah. I'm just going to limit myself to citing one example where it's very closely tied in with the light verse of the Quran. Baha'u'llah writes, "Behold how in this dispensation the worthless and foolish have fondly imagined that by such instruments as massacre, plunder and banishment, they can extinguish the lamp which the hand of divine power hath lit, or eclipse the day star of everlasting splendor. How utterly unaware they seem to be of the truth, that such adversity is the oil that feedeth the flame of this lamp. Such is God's transforming power. He changeth whatsoever he willeth, and he verily has power over all things." Baha'u'llah goes even further and identifies this word Baha and this concept of light as the greatest name of God. Now this concept of the greatest name of God is something that goes all the way back to Judaism, to Jewish tradition. But in Islam there was a very well-known tradition that the greatest name of God was something that remained hidden but which had enormous power. Those who had this greatest name could perform mighty miracles with it. Needless to say, in Shi'ism, this concept was both in Sunnism and in Shi'ism, but needless to say, in Shi'ism, it is the Imams who were stated to have this knowledge of the greatest name. And it was through having knowledge of the greatest name that they had the powers that they had. Ali, for example, is reported to have said, "Our Lord has given to us knowledge of the greatest name, through which, were we to want to, we could rend asunder the heavens and the earth, and paradise and hell. Through it we ascend to heaven, and we travel to the east and to the west until we reach the throne of God, and sit upon it before God. And he gives to us all things, even the heavens, the earth, the sun, moon, the stars, the mountains, the trees, the paths, heaven and hell." So, I think you can see the similarities between possession of the greatest name, which is identified with the power and station of the Imam, and possession of the Qurana, which is the power and authority both of the prophethood of Zoroaster and the kingship of the ancient Persian kings. By announcing the greatest name of God to be Baha, glory, light, and other concepts equivalent to the ancient word Qurana, and appropriating that name for himself, Baha'u'llah has in a sense completed the circle of Iranian religion, taking us back to the origins of Iranian religion. And indeed we can find echoes of the concept of Qurana also in relation to kingship. For example, in Baha'u'llah's words addressed to Nasir al-Din Shah, he says, "We fain would hope that His Majesty the Shah will shine forth with a light of justice," using the word Ishraq here, "whose radiance will envelop all the kindreds of the earth." So very much referring back to this tradition of the divine light of the king. But as I said, what I've tried to show in this paper is that this concept of a glorious light, a bright solar light, as the closest thing on this physical earth to the divinity, which is the first thing that emanates from the divinity, which is therefore the source of the coming into being, the creation of everything else, and is the source of all true power and authority, and is the source of of spiritual illumination that sheds itself upon the heart of the true believer. This concept has its origins in the earliest manifestations of Iranian religion. And although the word associated with it has changed over the years from Qurana to Qure to Ishraq to Baha, the concept has remained there at the heart of Iranian religion through the centuries. Thank you.